This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, December 20th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. In the global race to produce advanced semiconductors, India wants to get on the track. It's got an ambitious plan that it hopes will help it become an alternative to Chinese manufacturing. But building any technology, particularly chips, takes a lot of time and money to get started. So how long until India could see its bet pay off? On today's show, our South Asia correspondent Philip Wen joins us to discuss. That's after these headlines. The maker of Fortnite, Epic Games, has agreed to pay $520 million in what the Federal Trade Commission says are two record-breaking settlements. One claim filed in federal court alleges the company violated children's privacy by collecting personal information from Fortnite players under the age of 13 without notifying their parents or obtaining verifiable parental consent. The regulator also says Epic put children and teens at risk by connecting them with strangers using voice and text chats. In a separate settlement, the FTC accused Epic of tricking players into making unintended purchases. Epic didn't deny or admit to the FTC's allegations as part of the settlement. In a statement, the company said it accepted the deal because it wanted to be at the forefront of customer protection. The European Union is charging Facebook parent Meta with antitrust violations over Facebook Marketplace. The European Commission, the bloc's antitrust enforcer, said on Monday that the social media company could be pushing out competition in classified ad services by giving users free access to Marketplace. The commission said it's also concerned that Meta places unfair conditions on competing classified ad services that use Facebook and its sister company, Instagram. Meta disputes the commission's charges, saying Facebook users may automatically get access to Marketplace, but they're free to use or not use it. It also says Marketplace offers an alternative to large e-commerce advertisers like Amazon, and that it doesn't use data from other classified ad services to compete with them. Meta will have an opportunity to argue its case before the commission makes a final decision. If the commission concludes the company breached antitrust rules, Meta could face a fine of up to 10% of its global annual revenue. Less than 2 months after Elon Musk took ownership of Twitter, users of the social media platform want him out of the top job. More than 17 million people voted in a poll Musk tweeted over the weekend, asking if he should step down as head of Twitter, and saying he would abide by the results. Nearly 58% of them voted in favor of Musk stepping down as chief. So, what could this latest twist mean for Twitter? Here to discuss this is WSJ Twitter reporter Alexa Kors. Hi, Alexa. Thanks for joining me.
Hey.
Okay, so if Musk does step down, who are the potential replacements for him?
Well, it's really not clear. Most of Twitter's previous leadership was either fired or resigned. There are like a few different possible scenarios. You know, does he promote someone internal, someone who's already at Twitter? Does he look to someone he already trusts at one of his other companies and brings them over to Twitter? Or does he look for an external advisor or someone who's, you know, worked at Twitter in the past?
He will still be the owner, though, so won't he still be calling the shots?
I think that's safe to think so. He clearly wants to run the business the way he wants to run it. So even if technically he steps away or is less focused on the day-to-day, at the end of the day, he owns the company. He's the boss.
Let's talk a little bit about this use of polls, because this isn't the first time Musk has asked Twitter users to vote on something. Is he actually making decisions this way?
I mean, we can't really know from outside his head, right? He's used polls before. He's used a poll about a Tesla share sale before when he was already kind of locked into that program. At least in this specific case, he said last month that he was planning to step down eventually and find someone else to run Twitter. Maybe this is an acceleration of that. It's hard to know.
Alexa, you've done some reporting that says Twitter is actually looking for some fresh investment now. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Right. So I spoke to one investor who told me he's been contacted by Musk's team and they're looking for another round of investments in Twitter. And this is interesting because it comes after we've heard concerns about Twitter's financial condition right now. Musk himself has said that bankruptcy was a possibility, and he said Twitter is losing money every day.
All right, that's our reporter, Alexa Course. Thanks for joining us, Alexa.
Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up, why does India think a 355-square-mile tract of salty marshland is its ticket to semiconductor production? We'll explain after the break.
If you can plan barbecues and weddings, you can plan to protect yourself from a natural disaster. Sign up for local alerts, prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
India has earmarked a vast tract of land in the Prime Minister's home state as the location of a roughly $20 billion semiconductor fabrication plant. As part of the plan, it signed on the manufacturing giant Foxconn and the India-focused commodities powerhouse Vedanta Group. The tie-up would represent the biggest corporate investment in India ever. It's all part of India's efforts to boost high-value manufacturing, something that, up until now, it's trailed its regional rivals on. So what'll it need to do to pull it off? Joining me to talk about that is WSJ South Asia correspondent Philip Wen. Hi, Philip. Thanks for joining me.
Great to be here.
So India has these ambitions to get into advanced chip making. Can you tell me a little bit more about how it's planning to do that?
So they've basically announced what starts off as a $10 billion incentive. That includes essentially a whole range of subsidies and financial incentives for chip manufacturers to set up fabrication plants, fabs as they're known, by providing 50% of the upfront capital costs back as a kind of rebate. And that it's seen as a rather generous incentive, but also a necessary one, given that India doesn't really have an existing semiconductor manufacturing ecosystem. And to attract the bigger players, there needs to be some kind of incentive to get them into the country, given that there is quite a lot of competition in terms of other countries doing similar programs.
There's this one site in Prime Minister Narendra Modi's district. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so the place is called Dallera. As you say, it's in the state of Gujarat, which is where the current Prime Minister Narendra Modi was formerly a chief minister of the state. It's sort of a state that has a reputation for being rather business friendly, and it does have quite a significant manufacturing industry by Indian standards. Dallera itself is pretty much a blank slate. You know, it's something that Mr. Modi had ideas about developing what is basically a large, sprawling tract of marshland, basically a whole group of villages, and trying to make use of it because it wasn't, in his view, it wasn't doing much. And he had visions of sort of developing it into a more futuristic, advanced manufacturing hub, much like, China has Shenzhen in the country's south.
What are some of the hurdles to getting an advanced semiconductor industry off the ground?
I think the main hurdle is the sheer complexity and difficulty in terms of making semiconductors. It's something that experts say are just about one of the hardest things to manufacture, given, first of all, the type of workforce, the trained workforce that's required, the experience that's required to get this off the ground, and the sheer cost as well. Semiconductor fabs takes billions, if not tens of billions of dollars of investment just to get going. And then it's years to set up and then years after that to even potentially break even.
So we know India wants to get this semiconductor industry sort of rolling in the country. But what other kinds of advanced tech manufacturing does India have at the moment?
So essentially, not all that much. India has been encouraged by recent strides made in manufacturing, particularly in making cars and in assembling mobile phones, but it's still not really all that proven when it comes to that next level, you know, the really high tech end of manufacturing and the advanced manufacturing space. And also it has long had a sort of reputation for being somewhere that's hard to do business. So these are kind of the challenges that India face in terms of trying to shift that perception.
Let's dive in a little bit more to that bit, because why pursue advanced chip making in the first place?
So it's a confluence of factors, really. One of the main ones is basically India's observations of what's happened over the past couple of years in terms of, in particular, the pandemic, but also its worsening ties with China and the desire to manufacture more locally, including semiconductors, is basically an attempt to decrease its reliance on Chinese imports, in particular electronic imports. So that's one of the main motivations. Another one is because of the pandemic, it's really wreaked havoc on global supply chains and has made moving things around in general a lot more expensive. And so again, it makes sense from a Indian perspective to try and hedge that risk and to make as much as possible within its own countries.
So how long then until this sector is off the ground?
It's probably still years away. What we're looking at are sort of firm commitments in terms of plans to get to make investments and get things off the ground. They've located, in terms of Foxconn and Vedanta, which is the highest profile investment announced in terms of building a chip fab in India. They've located the site, they've been out there to look at it, and they're likely to start construction, you know, early next year. Even then, it will take possibly around 2025 before the first chips roll off the production lines. So you're probably looking at about 3 years before they get things off the ground.
All right, that's our South Asia correspondent, Philip Wen. Philip, thanks so much for joining us.
Not a problem. Thank you.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Free Expression, a new podcast from The Wall Street Journal with me, Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of The Wall Street Journal. It's a podcast in which we're going to be trying to do something a little different, dig a little deeper into the issues behind the headlines that are in the news all the time. So please join me for my new podcast, Free Expression, with Jerry Baker at The Wall Street Journal. We're very much looking forward to really having some fascinating conversations, and I very much hope you'll join us.